Let's do a quick mic check. Who is in studio with us today?
I'm Kim Rogers.
Yes. And you've got a buddy.
Oh, I do. Her name is Minnow.
Minnow.
Yes.
And she's wearing a sweater, which is adorable.
Because it's been cold, you know.
Yes.
And she doesn't get to wear sweaters often, so we're sporting it.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely an apparel choice. And?
Well, my name is Lance Thomas with Mr. Lance Esteem. My two babies didn't come today. One of them is, his name is Rafi. He'd knock everything over in here, so I decided not to bring him. And my other one would be at the door guarding, making sure nobody comes in.
All very good jobs. And my third?
Morning, everybody. My name's Gary Hudson. I am the proud grandfather of Brago. You can call me Papa. He's actually my son's dog. He rescued him from the Humane Society, and Brago's hanging out in the truck because, he would do some damage in here as well.
Yeah, everyone thinks so, but it's, you know, it's a pretty resilient studio. Mr. Wilson decided to stay home today. He's the hound of music because gotcha. He likes to party, and it would be definitely a party in here with all the dogs. So what's with the dogs? What do these dogs do? They have a job.
They do have a job. So they sniff out CRB, coconut rhinoceros beetle larva, in mulch piles and yard waste, and they alert us to that. So that people can then, you know, take action. And we are with, though, collectively, the three of us, and there's another dog and handler team. And we're part of Conservation Dogs Hawaii.
Conservation Dogs Hawaii.
Yes, and their website is conservationdogshawaii.org.
Okay.
So we've been trained by professionals.
Pros.
Our dogs, at least, have been trained by professionals. Over the last 6 months.
Okay, so it's a relatively new program then. And I was talking a little bit about this with Felicia Cowden last night on her show. And what I love about this is that we're taking action on coconut rhinoceros beetle. Like, and it's something that everyday normal people can do in their yards and their areas and actually take action. Whereas before it just seemed like this is this problem, we've got no solutions, bye-bye coconut trees and agriculture. But now there's a solution, and it's great, and you get to play with dogs. Like, I'm obsessed. So once the dogs find the CRB, then the CRB larva in the mulch piles and stuff, then what happens? You can probably speak to this, Lance.
Some dogs try to eat them.
Yeah, she's talking about my dogs.
Yes.
When my dogs find them, they try to eat them.
Is that bad?
Well, from what we were told from one of our mentors, Marley, one of her dogs ate one and then it came out whole. So, yeah, maybe too much info this early in the morning.
Yeah.
Morning is the time for it, I hear. Is it still alive once it comes out home? That's my question.
I'm not sure, honestly, but
what
the dogs do, again, they basically survey these piles, and each dog has their own individual alert on when they find them, right? So when my dogs find them, initially they go into a hard down, and they look at eye contact. You know, with Minnow's, the sweet baby that we have here, she goes into a sit. And then she looks directly at Kim, and then Kim says, "Show me," and she'll walk over to the spot, put her nose on it, and turn around and show her, which is really awesome to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all the dogs are individual in their behavior. Like, Minnow's also, well, you know, we have to point out one of the reasons why Minnow is in the studio is because she's like a quarter the size of the rest of our dogs. So let's talk about our dogs. So Minnow is, she's a I guess you could call her a mutt. She's part miniature pincher and part border collie. Mm. And she's a rescue. So I've had her for about a year. And so she's a, you know, with dripping wet, she's maybe 18, 19 pounds. So you don't have to be a big dog, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of our other fellow colleagues here have bigger dogs. But so she's, you know, she is little. She works slower. She's shorter steps. But she's also, I like to think, maybe closer to the ground. So she gets that whiff of CRB. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Yeah. But yes, their job is to alert. And they all have different personalities. They all work differently. It's lots of fun to see.
Okay. So, what does your dog do when things happen?
Borrego, so we've been taught, like our mentors, Marley and Kyoko Johnson from Conservation Dogs Hawaii, and we went through about an 8-month training process. First, we had to fill out this super long questionnaire. I learned a lot about the dog just filling out that paperwork.
Because the dog was like, here's how I want to operate.
Do they like mud? Do they like a ball? Do they like treats? So just kind of get to know the dog a whole lot. And then that's how they kind of whittled it down to the candidates that we became. Then we went through like an 8-month training process.
So it's not just any dog. It's a dog that has specific
qualities that the Conservation Dogs Hawaii have, you know, they're the professionals, they've sorted out and declared over their experience, because they have many different dogs in their organization. They're doing little fire ants, they're doing seabirds, they're doing rats, they're doing mongoose. And when this opportunity, so Kauai first got its coconut rhinoceros in 2023, and we weren't sure, you know, how to process, you know, what we were going to do. They came over and did a proof of concept, Kyoko and the dogs from Oahu, to show Office of Economic Development here on Kauai that these dogs can sniff out these coconut rhinoceros larvae in mulch piles. So then they got money from Department of Agriculture to fund this coming over, because they had to fly over instructors over here to teach us. So that's where we started to learn about how our dogs behave. So every dog reacts differently is where I'm heading towards. And you can see the dog, like, once they pick up that scent, oh, they get nose to the ground, and they're like, whoa, 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 and they get all excited. And my dog, he'll start pawing at it, trying to get closer to the scent. And then he'll literally, once he's decided it's here, he just lays down right on top of him, and he's waiting for his turkey breast chunks of meat. Because we thought he was ball-driven, but we found out he was food-driven. So,
oh, that is a lot to learn.
Yeah. No, yeah. We had to figure out. And then also, in our particular case, we are a father-son team. And so he it was the first time that they did like two handlers. And they said it wasn't, they weren't so sure how that was going to work out. But it turned out that Borrego was very receptive. If I hid, or Hunter hid, way out of his view, he was very receptive, both of us handling styles. So, yeah, so Borrego goes nose to the ground, gets all nuts, starts pawing at it, lays down, looks up for his turkey bites.
Okay, so there is definitely some motivation in that.
Oh, yeah.
What are the qualities, then, that Conservation Dogs Hawaii are looking for in a dog?
It's not breed.
Okay.
A lot of people think it's a certain breed. It's not breed specific, but it's, as you've kind of heard us all mention, our dogs are a little rambunctious.
Rambunctious. Okay.
Yeah. So
they like to party. So maybe
they
Wilson
like to party.
Is
high
a candidate
drive.
For this.
High drive.
High drive.
Drive. Drive is a very high qualification for them. Whether the dog is food motivated or, you know, toy motivated is very important. Another important thing that was on the questionnaire was dog reactivity, right? So will the dog work if there's a chicken present? You know, will the dog work if there's other dogs in the area, right? So these were all things that we learned in our questionnaire, and that really helped narrow, you know, down, you know, the dogs that actually would be good for this type of work.
Okay. I feel like these are all interview questions that I could ask potential staff here at KKCR as well. Will you work when there's dogs present? Right. Do you work when there's food
chickens.
Around to chickens and
yeah.
stuff?
Yeah. 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 Good point. Very
other
good.
Things
and
to
add
chase.
Add them to your interview
yeah.
question.
Do you still work?
Yeah.
And then I just want to throw out, we got another dog. He's not with us right now, and that's Sunny.
Sunny.
She's
shout
a little pit bull.
Sunny.
And she's like, and I was just thought of her in my mind, because Borrego could really, he's not real people. He's not people motivated so much, but boy, when Sunny comes back, she throws a party and she wants to be petted and jump on you and look how beautiful I am. I'm great. And she's super awesome,
she
too.
She goes through the high five run.
Yeah,
you know, we all have to line up.
Yeah, we do the soccer tunnel for Sunny, you know. And it's like,
So those are not good coworkers, is what you're saying.
No, he's a great coworker.
Great
we love Sunny.
Yeah. So they can
we
work
all,
together.
For sure. Yes.
Do the dogs work together? Like if you see like a giant mulch pile, or like at the golf course, or like a big property, can the dogs work together and spot it out so you guys will go in a
Absolutely.
Team?
Absolutely. I think so. I think when we do our
training
training sessions, the dogs would all be, you know, in close proximity. So they all are familiar with each other, you know, and I think especially like a big property, you know, where there's multiple piles. Kim could be on a pile, Gary could be on a pile, I could be on another pile, and we just report back to each other clear, and then we can just double check, you know, check each other's work.
And it's also like us getting a second opinion, too.
Exactly.
So, like, we can send Minnow in, and then we can send Brego in, mm-hmm. you know, on the same mulch pile following up. But another key thing, I think, for people and your listeners to know is we work our dogs. Well, first of all, they wear these cute, well, cute for
working
Minnow harnesses,
canine.
Right?
Uh-huh.
But they work on a long line.
Okay.
So they're leashed. We don't just, like, let the dogs loose and let them have at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and in some places, I mean, that's for the safety of the dog as well as, you know, the property or homeowner.
Yeah, and also not supposed to have dogs off leashes on account of wild birds and
right.
this
the
and
other
that
critters.
Sensitive. Yeah, mm-hmm. all the other critters. But, but yeah, no, it's super fun. They work together. And in fact, this morning when Minnow saw Lance, oh, she just got so excited because she associates Lance with this work and this effort. And that just shows you how much fun they have doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. And when they use their, here's another cool thing we've learned, mm-hmm. and we've actually seen it in all of our dogs. When they, you know, we can run them for miles and miles and miles and or play ball like I have to do with Minnow like 5 times a day with one of those chuckets, right? Never mm-hmm. wears her out. But when she's using her nose, 20 minutes of using her nose is like an hour of running her.
Okay.
So it's engagement, right? It's
uh-huh.
they're thinking, they're working, they're using their brains, they're using their nose. And it wears them out. It's exhausting.
Yep.
In a good way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is really interesting, again, thinking about my own coworkers, like and you know, like I'm writing a grant per se or writing an underwriting message. I need another set of eyes on it. Just like maybe you'd have two dogs at the mulch pile. And then it's also like, at the end of the day, man, I am tired. I've done a lot of braining.
Exactly.
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
Yeah. What is the training process like for the dogs? And for how much training was it for the dogs, and then how much training was it for the humans?
Oh, both.
Great question. I think we worked harder. You know, because we had to learn, you know, how to actually handle the dogs, right? The very, you know, minute, you know, body movements that the dogs do, we have to be able to understand what it is and actually encourage them to keep going. Mm. Or if we do something that isn't advantageous to what they're feeling, they'll shut down or they'll go off scent. So, like, we really had to be trained, you know. Most people have dogs and they walk them on leashes, but it's different leash handling when you're actually working with a dog who's in scent detection, right? So we had to be trained on how to, like, use the leash with the dog, which sounds kind of elementary, but it was one of the biggest things that we had to learn. And it's something that we progressively get better at it, you know. But we all went out there just thinking, oh, just let the dog do its thing. And we learned very quickly that that's not how you do it.
Interesting. Okay.
We also had to learn, too, about, like, how wind moves. So how the wind that we're experiencing in that moment can affect how the scent is moving.
Absolutely.
So how can we set our dogs up for success to where they're picking up the scent? And these are very subtle scents, right? And they're buried. Larvae
right.
buried underground. I mean, if I held a larva up to my nose right now, I doubt I would be able to smell it.
And I don't want to smell it either.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like it smells like real bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
So it's a subtle scent. And then I also understand that CRB larvae exist like 1 to 2 feet down in the ground where, my initial solution was like, oh, I got chickens, like hundreds of them. I'll just put my chickens in your mulch pile, but then they don't really get it because chickens will scratch the surface and the larvae are down a foot or two. How does that work with the dogs?
Well, so the larvae can be down a foot or two, but they can also, it's not just mulch piles. The larvae, the adult CRB will lay their eggs as well in rotting tree stumps. Right? So anything that's decomposing and rotting. And we have found larvae above ground, but like in a mulch pile, not very deep. And yet then you can also find them, you know, a foot into the ground. It mm-hmm. sort of just depends on the substrate and the breeding material that they've laid their eggs in. But you're absolutely right. Chickens could have a nice little meal. Pigs could have a nice little meal. But they're not necessarily going to get everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, we understand that the prevalence of CRB around the... It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Right. How often do you and your dogs work?
So, we just got our certification, let's say, early December. And we've, with the holiday season coming up, we kind of held off on putting it on blast. Mm-hmm. And so... Early January, mid-January, we started getting the message out. Office of Economic Development, Nikki Kunioka-Voles down there, who's heading the program, she started putting out. It kind of got out on Instagram. We've got an email site now for, it's kawaiicrbk9@gmail.com. And that's,
is it spelled canine, like canine or...
K and the number nine.
Okay, cool.
Yes. Thanks for asking. And then so there's also at Conservation Dogs Hawaii, there's a survey form on there, and you could just hit the tab, and we have several general questions to kind of figure out, like, if it's a valid place for us to go search and whatnot. And so those are a couple of places to reach us. And so we've kind of just gone public. We've gone starting to put the word out, and we've probably got 10 or 15 people wanting surveys in mm-hmm. the last week or two.
Whoa.
So we're starting to line that up now. And so with our working schedules, we have two people who work Monday through Friday, so they're mostly available weekends. Mm-hmm. We have another gentleman with Sonny, Matt and Sonny, and he's available some weekdays and some weekend days. And then Lance and myself are kind of open all the other days.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we're kind of scheduling it to get out. And the dogs we spoke to, their fatigue levels, so they're only good to do an hour plus search at a time. Like, we can't come and do somebody's 5-acre parcel. We want to break that up into the different, you know, mulch piles and stuff. So,
and climate.
And climate, yes,
too.
Huge. Yeah. So we're looking at doing surveys on weekends and weekdays and stuff. It's starting to snowball. So yeah, we're taking and we're scheduling and working around our guys. But I, you know, if we could do 2 or 3 surveys a week, I think that would be awesome. You know? That would be...
And this is a great time of year because it's cooler. That's why Minnow's wearing her sweater today. It's really cute. It's purple. But, you know, in the summer, when spring, summer, fall comes, it's, you know, we won't be working them from like 10 to 4 in the afternoon just because the heat will really. And it also changes the way the scent moves.
Oh.
Yeah. Air temperature will change the way the scent moves. Rain changes the way scent moves. These are all things to take into consideration that we have been, you know, taught and educated and trained for by Conservation Dogs Hawaii. And that is why, like Gary said, this has been like an 8-month training process.
Thank you, Kiyoko.
Thanks, Kiyoko. And what's also cool to know is one of our... So Kiyoko started Conservation Dogs Hawaii after she did a proof of concept science study in Hanalei looking for our endangered water birds that have been have botulism, mm-hmm. which is a disease that unfortunately is in the environment and it targets water birds specifically. It's complicated. But I participated with her and trained with her down there in Hanalei, as well as several other dog teams. And then she's just moved all across the state doing all kinds of other work, like Gary mentioned earlier, you know, finding seabird burrows at Mauna Kea on Hawaii Island, looking for devilweed, which is an invasive plant on Oahu. She's taken teams to various oceanic islands, like I want to say Wake Atoll, maybe Johnston Atoll as well, looking for yellow crazy ants, or clearing an area that's been eradicated of rats to make sure the rats are gone, you know. So these are all the different kind of crazy things that you can do with dogs, crazy cool things. And Kiyoko has done them. So she started Conservation Dogs Hawaii, and that's what we're a part of. But then she also reached out to Marley Monahan, who is with the USDA, and she is actually a CRB canine dog handler on Oahu. And so she is specifically trained working with dogs literally 5 days a week on CRB.
I know, your eyes are like, oh my God. Just like there's so much you can do with like dogs as an untapped resource for all sorts of efforts, like environmental efforts, conservation efforts. They're they're good in the medical field, like yeah. comforting people, and then knowing if you've got something to and you're gonna, you know, like, oh, you're gonna have an anxiety attack, it's time to like sit down,
and even detecting in the medical field for cancer, there's been studies into that, and what's really effective is UTIs, urinary tract infections.
Okay, because so, they're yeah. always sniffing crotches.
Wilson.
Sorry,
is.
Thinking
every time
about
I
Wilson.
Show up
yeah,
here, Wilson's like, hello.
He's just checking, you know, if you've got your medical stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Sort
oh, thanks, Wilson.
Sussed out.
Yeah.
And then also I did, I engineer a show called Deep Dive into Water Safety, and they have water rescue dogs.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
Because it just lengthens the time, the physical time that you can do, and then they can pull people to shore better, you know, they're
right.
just like,
right.
And just very
yeah.
good
dogs
with that.
Cool.
When I got into this, I started looking into the YouTubes and the scent trainings and the dogs. I've seen videos of a dog in the bow of a boat in a lake smelling yeah. human remains like 10, yeah. 15 feet down through the water.
Yeah,
it's
oh.
crazy what their nose can pick up. And that goes back to your question, comment earlier about the dogs and the depth of the piles. It's like,
yeah.
it's amazing that they pick up the scent, you know, 2 feet down. And there's like, it's here. I know it's here. You know,
uh-huh.
we'll dig down, we'll pull the dog off the pile for a minute, tell him wait on the side. We'll root around with our garden tools, our hoes and our picks and things, and sure enough, there they are.
There they are. When you're starting to train a dog for things like this, like, do you hold like a handful of CRB and go like, smell, and then give that motivator, smell, motivator? Like, how do you do it?
Well, it started off, I think our first few days, correct me if I'm wrong, it was a while ago, but we had several containers out, and the dogs, we just kind of went by and checked them out, and then as they checked out the one with the CRB, good, you know, and that was like, that started being the trigger. Oh,
okay.
I get praise if I stop and smell this one. Now, then they started like literally just leaving the other buckets and then going to that one. And then we started taking those containers out into the environment more, and then it was the same red bucket or whatever it was. But now it was out in the environment, in the bushes and amongst the trees. Then we graduated to going to like little glass jars with mesh on top, stainless steel mesh, so the larva couldn't get out. And we're tucking those here and there or putting them out in the field with other containers and having them pick out that container amongst all the others. So we slowly, it was baby steps. We graduated to the next. And it was interesting to the point with the smell and the stuff. And we had to learn was like, if the dog picked up on your body movement, your action, like if I was to hide the larva and then to walk Brago, I could cue him by just my body movements. So we have to do blind searches, blind surveys. So we'd have a family member or a friend or someone else. They would stash it for us so that us as the handler didn't know.
Oh,
and we wouldn't
right.
cue the dog either. So it just was this... just baby steps and building and building. And sometimes we took a couple steps backwards, like anything you're learning, and then we would make more steps forward. So, no, it was a really interesting process.
Well said.
Yeah. And then, so that's part of the training you as well as the dog for the thing.
And even as much as, like, our scent on the jar with the larva in it, they could pick up our scent, but we only want them cueing on the larva, the CRB. So we would wear plastic alcohol wash. We use like dish soap with no scent.
Uh-huh.
Gloves, alcohol wash, put the bugs inside, go hide them. And then we don't have any scent on them ourselves.
Because that's how smart the dogs are, right? They're cueing into all of those things. They're taking in so much with their nose. I mean, dogs' sense of smell is like 100,000 times better than ours. So it's crazy. So even the containers that Gary's talking about that we would use, we would switch them up all the time. Because we didn't want to just be throwing out CRB larvae into the environment and then maybe not finding it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we always would train with it in containers. And so we switch up those containers. Is it the glass jar that they're cueing on? Is it the stainless steel mesh lid that they're cueing on? Is it, you know, we have these wooden containers, you know, that we would put the CRB larva in. So, yeah, you're constantly having to switch that up. Otherwise, you don't want them cueing in on the wrong thing. You want them cueing in. And then eventually we did move to where we're surveying on known mulch piles that have larvae in them.
Okay, so, without the container at all to see, like, I'm getting the raw larva in the wild.
This is real life practice, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's almost 9:30 right now, and if you're just tuning in, this is Talk Story Radio, and we're talking story with representatives from Conservation Dogs Hawaii, and they use their dogs to sniff out coconut rhinoceros beetles in mulch piles around the island. And we're talking about the process of training, who their dogs are, what they do, how they got into this, which is a comprehensive test, and training the dogs, training the humans. We're going to listen to one message, and then I want to come back and see, once we find the CRB, now what do we do? Dogs go mulch pile, and you do residence or commercial?
We'll do both.
All the above.
Yeah, all of it.
We'll do, you know, it needs to be, Gary alluded to the questionnaire that we ask. It needs to be a safe place for our dogs to go. It's like, if you wouldn't send your dog or even yourself out on that pile or around that pile, it can't be like at the bottom of a cliff, for example. Right. We're not going to send dogs there.
Yeah.
But yeah, commercial, residential, yeah.
Yep. Okay.
So what we're looking for the breeding sites, right? We're doing the groundwork. We're not up in the trees. We're doing the groundwork. We're trying to find the keiki. We're trying to find the larvas. And they spend, 5-6 months in that pile.
Right.
And so what they're feeding on is decomposed vegetation, right, mulch. So that's what we're looking for. Like, if we're just going to come and check your backyard, that's not really kind. I mean, unless mm-hmm. you've got mulch piled up, then that's something we can search. And on the flip side of that, if you've got a pile of mulch and dirt and washing machines and cars, that's not what we're looking for either. So we're looking for that breeding ground specific. So from there, that's where we can. That's where we do our search in.
Yep. Right.
And then from there, we can. Yeah,
and it's very important, you know, for the safety of our dogs, because we're all, you know, we're all fur, you know, moms and dads first, right?
Yes.
So we're very particular about making sure our dogs aren't in harm's way. So, you know, we just ask, you know, for transparency whenever we ask if, you know, this, you know, pile has been poisoned or maybe has, you know, diatomaceous earth in it, which is very harmful to the dogs. You know, oh. If the dogs actually inhale diatomaceous earth, those really sharp shards will mess
harm
up their nose,
well.
You know,
yeah.
So, you know, we're parents first when it comes to this. So we want to make sure our dogs are safe.
Thank you. Okay, good.
Yeah.
And then you find them.
Yep.
Here we've got them.
Yep.
Maybe you find 3 or 4 spots or how it.
You know, if we find one spot,
yeah.
it's a breeding site.
That's
yep.
enough. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're like, okay,
yeah.
We're good. You know,
yeah.
You have them. So.
Okay, is a breeding site, and I'm doing air quotes on the radio,
yep.
is a breeding site the same as just being there for larva?
Yeah.
Okay.
For larva, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So breeding site is basically where the adult beetle has come in and laid eggs.
Okay.
And those eggs are now going through that whole metamorphosis, that whole process of going from egg to hatch, and then they go through several what are called instar stages. It's very much like people are familiar with caterpillars and butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a similar kind of life cycle. And the very end of it is when that larva, which is large, by the way, we haven't mentioned like how
yeah,
big
can we
they are.
Talk about how big and gross they are.
Oh, please. They're like, what, 3 inches?
It's
3.5 inches?
It's like the size of my thumb,
fatter.
Right?
It's the
fatter
thumb.
Than my thumb.
And fat and curled into like a C.
Okay.
And perhaps bigger. No, bigger.
Huge.
Yeah.
Okay, I kind of have man hands,
could,
so even bigger than that.
Yeah,
huge.
I do too. And you could fit a larva in the palm of your hand, right? That would fit there nicely.
And kind of whitish, grayish.
Yeah.
And blackish feet.
Transparent.
Like brownish sort of.
Kind of,
like
yes.
orgy
yeah.
brown.
Yeah.
Okay.
With mandibles, with like jaws that like. It will chomp through stuff
like coconut trees,
like coconut
okay.
fronds. Yeah,
like
yeah,
as soon
exactly.
as you say mandibles, is when I just go like,
Argh. Yeah,
yeah, that's
under,
creepy.
I mean, under I have a friend who, when I showed them to her, she was like, they were cute. There's like 1 in a million people who thinks like that. Most people are like, ew. But yes, I've kind of totally okay. lost my train of thought here because we got off onto how
how icky they are. Yeah, we're going to get your friend some help.
Yeah.
So
you
once,
know her.
Great.
Yeah.
Fun. So once we find them, then what happens?
Well, so we are, that's where our dog team kind of ends, right? Our responsibility is basically to say, yep, you have a
Got
lot
it.
Right here.
Okay.
And sometimes what you need to do is come back several times, too, because there may just be a few eggs that have been laid at that point in time and very little scent. But we can then provide help from that we get from the Office of Economic Development with brochures and next steps for people. But basically now it's up to the landowner, the homeowner, to decide what makes sense for them. But here's what I think is really cool about this project and this program is Lance got started because he has two amazing Malinois who are high drive dogs, who are working dogs, who are the definition of a dog that likes a job, right?
Yeah, they're usually police dogs, right? Yep.
Yes. Okay. Can be, yeah, okay. Absolutely. They do a lot of crazy stuff in the world. Mm-hmm. But he got involved because he was like, hey, this is something I can do with my dogs, get them working, get them, you know, give them a job.
Yeah, and it's an actionable thing for the island,
yeah.
too,
yeah.
to have,
yeah.
you know, like, here's a problem.
Community.
I got dogs that need a job. Let's
right.
do.
So through that process and learning about working his dog on CRB larva, then he was inspired, and I'll let him take it from here.
Well, he's petting a dog right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Minnow's begging for
love
pets.
Right now. It's hard not to pet her. She's so cute. So, yeah, I definitely saw, you know, like the problem that was here, you know, with the beetle and the larva and all these things. And when I looked at, you know, what the solutions were, you know, it was early on, it was if you see these, call this number, report here, you know, report this photo here and all these things. But there was no action after that, mm-hmm. you know, and even to this day, there really isn't any action. Like nobody comes to your property and actually moves them or tries to kill them. It's more of, we know you have them. Kind
there
of
you
like,
go.
Kind of like a good luck, you know. So
yeah, and they sort of maybe like write it down. It's like, okay, check, got it in this area.
We have the data, but there's no follow up. And for me, that you know that wasn't okay. You know, me myself being someone who is super solution oriented.
Right, I love that so much. So do you think that they didn't follow up with solution just because there wasn't a solution, or because this is so new, or because government takes a much longer time than nonprofits or citizens do?
Yeah, I think that, you know, they were being very careful, which is good, you know, because mm-hmm. it's easy to be, you know, pressured into a solution, you know, because of the urgency, right? So instead of saying, hey, do this, do this, do this, it's like, hold off, let's make sure, you know, and see what's actually out there, because, you know, there's a bunch of solutions that people are, you know, offering, but mm-hmm. If the state or the county is actually going to say something, you know, they're going to want to make sure that it actually works. So that's my theory on why, you know, the action's mm-hmm. been pretty slow, is that they're trying to be very thorough with what they're communicating to the public. So for myself, I did some research and I realized that, you know, every invasive species, every virus, anything that's, you know, invasive has a heat threshold where it can't survive, right? So
right.
even if we're talking about 2020, that had a heat threshold that it couldn't survive either, you know. So, you know, everything has a heat threshold. So I knew that these larvae and the beetles have one as well. And the best way to, you know, deliver, you know, heat to these things, especially in a green waste pile or mulch pile, was steam. So I invested in this steam machine from the Sioux Corporation, which is
He flew to.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't
South
know how much
Dakota,
time I have,
right?
But I flew to South Dakota and took a meeting with the CEO and uh-huh. told him that, you know, we have a really big issue here on Kauai, and our trees are dying, and we have, you know, a lot of beetles here. So I had to show them the mayhem, and I told him, I was like, I need a machine, you know, and their assembly line is super backed up. He was like, hey, I don't know what I can do at this moment. But after I showed him all this stuff, he was like, wait, that's what's happening? That used to... what is that? I was like, that was a coconut tree. He's like, it looks like a stick, you know, where'd
yeah.
the leaves go?
Uh-huh.
So there was a big sense of urgency.
Okay.
They moved us
Show
up.
Me the mayhem. Got
yeah.
it. Just got to repeat that.
Yep.
What are these machines made for initially?
Biosecurity. They use them for that. They're used in farms. So a lot of farmers will use it to, you know, clean out greenhouses, to pasteurize the soil. They're used at border protection for, you know, essentially if you bring something in from a foreign country that's not supposed to be here, you know, if those dogs find something, they'll use one of these steam machines to, okay, you know, sterilize it before they get rid of it so that it doesn't cause an infestation here.
And it's a different process than when they, say, irradiate something or they'll pesticide it. I know when you import coffee beans, you have to, like, you pesticide it, and then all of a sudden, none of the beans that we're roasting here are organic. So,
yeah, they're pretty specific with certain things that they do. But most of it's a lot of technology that a lot of farmers around the world use, and again, it's also used in biosecurity. So, you know, I invested in this machine. The CEO and his right hand flew out here for a demonstration that I did for the community. They were super engaging. They saw the urgency in the people, and they're on board in the fight with us. So I started the company, Mr. Lance Esteem, to help with that and to provide a solution for, you know, green waste, because I feel like a lot of people have been looking up when they should look down, just because everybody doesn't have a coconut tree, but everybody has some type of green waste or mulch on their property.
And this was not, like, an easy effort on Lance's part in a variety of ways, right?
Right.
So this is a person who's seeing a need in the community and stepping up, right?
Yeah, that's I like highlighting stories like that, just so that, you know, community radio is about, like, finding solutions and community-oriented solution-making, you know, while we're doing it. So I really love that. So,
thank you.
So what's the... So, okay, we got the dogs.
Yeah.
We find the CRB, and one of the options for a property owner is to go, I want to do some steam on this. And so they call you up, and then you come with this machine. How large is it? What's this like now?
Perfect. So, we have a 3-step process, you know, for the homeowner, so, or landowner. It would be, step one would be, you know, the detection, you know, of the larva with the canines, you know, as we mentioned earlier, we have, you know, the conservation dogs. So we have technically we have 4 dogs right now that are verified. I have another dog that's in training at the moment. So he's working on his certification hopefully in the next few months. But what we do is, you know, based on the schedule, because as Gary said, he and I have a lot of time during the week. You know, you can hire us for step one and we can come, you know, pretty quick to come assess it. And then we also take measurements of the pile. We check the pile for safety, making sure there's anything in there that could harm the animal. And then we take a measurement again, and we provide a quote from the measurement. So step two would be to steam the pile, which would be us using our steam generator, which is it's on a trailer, so it's a decent-sized machine, but it's mobile, so I can get it in even tight spaces.
Okay.
And basically we heat the bottom of the pile up, you know, really hot. We use some Schedule 40 piping across the bottom just to make sure that the bottom of the pile is the hottest first, because that's usually where they're at.
Yeah.
So if you don't do that, they can actually start digging down. But we, we have a system where we put some holes into the pipes so that once the steam is actually going through it, all the pressure is coming out of these holes, so it actually penetrates the ground. So we've been able to have some success up to about 6 inches in the ground as well. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And then there's just nowhere for them to go because you start at the bottom
and work our way up, and it's tarped. So the steam is actually just permeating through that pile, and we make sure that the temperature's even throughout, because the cold spots, you know, that they'll find the cool spot in the pile to, you know, like, we're safe here, you know.
And then,
so that happened at my first demonstration in front of the community, which was awesome. I love being transparent.
Yeah, super cool. That would happen to me as well.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And then step three is just quarterly maintenance. So we come back every 3 months to make sure that, you know, we eliminate whatever's in the pile. Our steam treatment eliminates the beetle in all of its life cycles, from egg all the way to beetle. And, you know, the 3-month number is because their larvae from about 5 to 7 months, given the season. They hatch a little bit earlier in different seasons. But we go every 3 months because that's pretty much the halfway point of them in their larval cycle. Okay. So we want to ensure that no beetles actually reach maturity coming out of that pile. So that's kind of the maintenance aspect of it. And the homeowner gets to use the mulch or soil, whatever it is, once we steam it. It's actually, you can use it. It doesn't have to sit there anymore.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, and it's okay stuff. It doesn't have, like, a chemical in it or sort of stuff.
No, we're just using hot water and steam. 100% clean, zero chemicals.
Brilliant. And then so proof of concept, when it works, you kind of rake through it and find a bunch of dead bodies in it.
Oh, absolutely. We double check our work, especially, like I mentioned, our first demonstration, they didn't die. It's definitely been a thing for us to, you know, confirm our work, and we've been very transparent about that. We recently just had another steam job at Molar Organica with Netta Marta Whitlock. And once we steamed the pile, they were out there with me. We all had our shovels, mm-hmm. and we all dug through it. So, you know, it's easy to, you know, only show the good stuff on, you know, social media. Oh, look, they're dead. But mm-hmm. we didn't show you the other three squirming over here. We were so, you know, excited and confident with our ability that we invited everyone to have a shovel. Everyone dug in. We found a bunch of dead beetles. They were super happy, and they used the compost that we steamed, and now they got space to create more piles.
Yeah, that is great. And I think... You know, this might sound a little too...
Go for it.
Yeah. Where, you know, every dead beetle is, you know, you've just wiped out generations.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can give you a quick number that, you know, really makes sense. So, 10 larvae left undetected. Mm-hmm. And let's assume that half of them mature into females.
Oh, God. Right? Math.
Over the course of 2 years, that's 25,000 eggs that get laid. Right? Okay. The average pile that is infested has way more than 10 of them in there. Kim and I have been working alongside each other for a while, and we dug through a pile that was not big, and we dug out at least 75 of them.
75. You know?
And we stopped shoveling. We were like, we're not going to dig through and take all these things out. But it's safe to say that, you know, the average pile that's really infested has at least 100 of them in there, right? So 100 of them left undetected in a 2 year span is 250,000 eggs. Right, so when you look at these numbers, like
it's exponentially,
it just keeps going. Yes. So all we're doing now is trying to not let these things reach maturity. Right, so we're essentially stopping millions of beetles from being born over the course of 2 years because you got to look at it in the long game. Right,
yes.
So if I can, you know, eliminate millions of beetles in the course of, you know, a 2 year span, you know, I can look in the mirror and say at least I tried.
Oh gosh.
So it really comes down to yard waste management.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm guilty of this. You know, we have our property, my husband and I, you know, we would take the palm fronds that fall, the cocos that fall that we didn't use, and, you know, pile them off in a corner of the yard, right? And I probably got years and years worth of that yard pile, and now, you know, we're having it removed. And we don't need a mulch pile on our property because we're not farmers. And we don't need that yard waste pile just sitting there decomposing and potentially becoming a breeding site. We keep coming back to this term, breeding site. So there's things that like a homeowner like I can do. Get the yard waste removed. Keep it removed. Don't let it pile up. But if I'm somebody who needs to use mulch because I'm a farmer or a gardener or what have you, you can steam it. You can then regularly as well turn it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right? You can thin it. We've gone into some places where we've surveyed and found CRB larvae, and they only had that pile there because they'd taken down some tree and whoever took the tree down just chipped it and left the mulch for them, and they didn't have any big plans for it, so they just thin it across the yard, you know, really mm-hmm. thin so it dries out.
I have people that thin my mulch pile for me. They're chickens.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
they just move it around. They turn it over.
And they leave you some eggs.
Sometimes. Jerks. But then I'll use that as like a deep litter in their brooder and stuff like that. So I'm using it. But I'm also like the hairs on the back of my neck are like, ooh, the palm fronds. Ooh, I've got places like that too that I could be doing a lot better in my yard.
And we talk about mulch piles. That's because it's sort of code for a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. There are, beyond mulch piles, these CRB will lay eggs. Like I mentioned earlier, rotting tree stumps, you mm-hmm. know?
Yes.
Or I know people who have taken their coconut trees down. This is the other thing I like to share is just because you see some CRB damage on your coconut tree doesn't mean your tree is going to die.
It's not dead.
It's not dead.
Yeah.
But I know people who have taken their trees down or a couple trees down because they think, oh my God, my tree's going to die. Let's just cut it down. No.
Mm-hmm. It just has ukus.
It just has ukus. And those ukus can fly. And those ukus will, like the next night, probably be on a neighbor tree, coconut tree, right?
Yeah.
And then what they, you know, don't just leave if you have cut a tree down, a coconut tree for whatever reason, or any other tree in your yard, don't leave those logs laying in your yard because they're just going to decompose and now they're going to be a breeding site.
Yes.
And you can take those to the county greenway sites. Do you find those to be adequate, the best? I mean, they move that around a lot. There's the dude with the D8 there, like, moving around.
Do either of you guys know what's happening? I don't know what's happening on that end.
I have a little bit of information.
Okay.
Fern and I have been in communication, Fern Holland, council member, and we're working on setting up some bait stations, you know, for the CRB. So we're looking at, I believe, 6 different locations to create essentially bait traps, which would just be mulch piles inviting the larva and the beetles, you know, to a specific spot that we can actually treat. There will be some at some of the waste stations, the greenway stations. I can't remember which ones, but I'm assuming there would be probably island-wide. And we're really focusing in the Wailua area just because that's, you know, kind of ground zero at this point. But essentially, we would be making these things, you know, attractive to the beetles because we're going to have them on a reoccurring maintenance schedule to be able to eradicate them that way.
Beetle attraction?
The beetle attraction is green waste, the mulch pile, the coconut logs, like she's saying.
Do they have a pheromone that you would, like, spray on it, like live nude beetles and to get there?
Yeah, okay. And they all go there and get the freak on.
Actually, light is an attractant as well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then that's a breeding site.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'm relating this too much to people.
Right? You are, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, like, I'm just going to anthropomorphize the beetles and the dogs and just really go for it. What are my next questions?
Yeah. So I wanted to add to, like you're saying, the follow-up stuffs. One thing I'd really like to message to everybody who's listening, and you guys can share the word, is we're not CRB cops. Okay, we're coming to your place. We're not going to put you on blast. Oh, ho, we found stuff at Annie's place. You know, it's not like that.
Don't shame me because I've got the palm fronds.
Absolutely. And actually, it's the opposite. By not doing something or saying something, that you should be shamed for. Because this is a whole community effort. You can do great work on your property, but these beetles will fly 1 to 2 miles at night looking for their breeding sites. So we need everybody in the general area trying to clean up their opala, their green waste out of the area. And the other thing is, we're just going to offer some solution-based, a few ideas. We're not going to, you know, one of them would absolutely be Mr. Lance's steam.
That's not the only thing, though.
No, but there's nets. There's you can net your mulch pile to keep the beetles from going in or out. There's turning the mulch, like Kim was saying. There's other options. And we're just going to follow up with those things, and we would love to do a follow-up 3 or 4 months later.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was something I wanted to get out. And it's, you know, we're not CRB cops. We're just trying to slow this invasion.
Yep.
I don't think we're going to ever stop it, but, man, we got to slow it
because
it's bad.
Yep.
And to also, we are not CRB cops. We are also the Conservation Dogs Hawaii, the service that we provide, is free. It's free of charge to landowners and homeowners. Yep.
I can't say the incentive prices on the air.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is terrible because I really want people to know that.
Did not realize
that.
So just take that back.
Put it back in. So how do people get... So they can email you. That email is kawaiicrbk9@gmail.com to sort of start the process and get it rolling. How would people sign up to also be one of these community problem solvers like you have done?
Oh, to be a future canine handler,
or like,
dog team.
You know, me and Mr. Wilson are going to like start, you know, give Wilson a job kind of thing.
Well,
he's a comfort dog now, but I feel like he could be like,
yes, he does a good job too.
Really good job.
Yes, he's a greeter dog here at KKCR.
Yeah.
I've been greeted many times. At this point in time, Conservation Dogs Hawaii is not taking on new dog teams because we still have more training that we will be doing. We potentially might start training our dogs like on potted plants and that type of scenario. So, you know, maybe not out in the community on mulch piles, but in other ways that CRB, you know, can make its way to the island and or make its way around the island. because in that egg stage or even in the larval stage, you know, it's been found in bags of mulch. You know, it's unfortunately very cryptic and challenging, right? And there's no silver bullet, as you've been hearing us talk about all of these ways you can maybe deter beetles from breeding on your property, or what to. There's many options of what to do if you find the larva on your property. There's no one silver bullet, and honestly, it's not just a one thing either. Mm. So it's not just netting. You know, it's not. There's a variety. And I have to give a shout out to CRBHawaii.org, which is the statewide organization with science-backed information. And I mean, it's almost overwhelming the amount of information on their website, because it is complicated. It is something that's being. CRB has been in the South Pacific, I want to say, for like 30 some years. There's a lot of other places in the, you know, in the South Pacific that are struggling with this as well. So there are a lot of people working on it. Of course, it can't happen soon enough, right? We're all hoping for the answer. And there's people working on hopefully getting to the answer. But at this point in time, there's no one silver bullet.
Right. So we're just taking all of them. But the community problem solving and actionable items that people can take, you would say clearing your mulch piles, taking them maybe to the county facilities, also netting if you can. Mm-hmm. The netting you can purchase, can you purchase that on island somewhere?
I don't think so. I think that's an online purchase. That's where at least how I got mine, yes.
Okay.
But hopefully we'll get to where we have that available. Yeah. And, you know, there's brochures. Gary, do you want to talk about the brochures?
Yeah, there's brochures at my house. They're doing me a lot of good right now.
But yeah. The brochures came from?
It came from Office of Economic Development. Again, okay. Nikki Folks and Nalani Brune, who heads that department down there. But they've come up with a bunch of stuff. And then there's a bunch of help, like, protecting
what
your property,
do.
You know, the netting and the stuff, and then also what to do if found. So as we go do surveys, we'll be handing this sort of information out from the county on some more stuff.
It would probably be great to get those brochures, too, like at libraries or something where people can pick them up.
And to your, like, the community effort, there are some other organizations out there that are doing, like, weekend workplaces, you know, like Alicoco, the fish pond down there. They got stuff where they go and they actually turn mulch piles and do searching. There's another group in Poipu that does the same thing. So there are some community organizations that are, you know, little armies going out doing searching as well.
Right.
So
I do love about Kauai is, like, no one's like, oh, I hate living here, I'm just going to abuse it. Like, everyone loves Kauai, and right. We do a lot of, like, Aina-based volunteering and initiatives and stuff like that. So a really great way to get out and really make a difference and really help, and you can do this on the individual level. It's a small place, small island. Because you love it, we can volunteer at situations like this. We can do the stuff in our yard and then go help in a larger Aina-based initiative to make it happen, too.
Absolutely. And we all need to come together.
Absolutely. Yeah, and do it for the math, you know.
Yeah.
The math. Oh, my God. There's
scary
just
math.
10 of them turns into 250,000. Okay. I just, like, yeah, I can't even...
And then,
think of it.
And then going back real quick to the dogs, if you have dogs that are interested, you could. Conservation Dogs Hawaii does have a volunteer program, and it's not just CRB, and I don't know what they have coming up on their agenda, but, you know, if there was enough interest for the little fire ants and whatnot, she could bring over a class for that too. So I would reach out to them, showing your interest, and maybe she could put together
definitely,
something for us.
Definitely inquire. I think if, you know, 10 to 12 people filled out the questionnaire and 10 of them were actually, you know, dogs that they considered, I think that they would actually put it together. There's just a lot of logistics moving over here. Like we said, they fly over here, they have to get hotels, lodging, they're coming over here, you know, for weekends at a time, so it probably wouldn't be worth it for one or two dogs.
Yeah, but if there was just like a little
if we just flood it, we flood the inbox and, you know, there's 20 people that want to do it, you got their attention.
Well, here's the other thing too, you know, I have a big interest in cross training minnow on other things, be it LFA or be it mongoose, you know, what have you. These dogs are I mean, they're specialists, but they can also be cross-trained into other scents. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, not just one scent, but more.
Right.
So if your dog needs a job, they're just loafing about the house, and they could could benefit society, whether they be motivated by philosophical concerns, environmental
treats,
play, affection. Conservationdogshawaii.org is where to get your dog started with a job. And they can also reach out to you guys at kawaiicrbcanine@gmail.com, not only to get a survey on your property, but maybe they could ask you guys questions.
Yeah, for sure.
About that.
For sure.
Because I love this interview so much, I'm going to make a special archive about it that you can find at kkcr.org, and then head to the archives section, and it'll be in the special archives. And I'll have these links to these websites and emails and stuff on there as well.
Don't forget to add MrLanceEsteem.com.
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 Okay. Thank you so much for that. That's great way to get information out to the community. Thanks, Annie.
Yeah. I'm loving this. And like what we can do at Community Radio is spread that word and really lift up people that are doing community problem solving.
Thank you so much.
So yes, stoked
thank
on that.
You. That's a big help for us, just getting the word out right now. Because, again, I don't know. We want people to know we're available, we're ready to go, and want to do some work.
Yeah, these dogs are done loafing around. It's
They're
time to get
loafing.
To work.
I'm
the
done,
holiday
I'm
is
done
over.
Loafing.
Yeah.
The holiday
holiday's
is over.
No more cookies.
Right? Off. Yeah.
We're doing this.
And Minnow is like at the door looking at me like, let's go.
Yeah, we got stuff to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely got her like head turned, judgy look on. So
she's talking to me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Gary, Lance, Kim, thank you so much for coming in here. Also, love your team hats.
Yeah, we represent. Kyoko, we're wearing our hats. You can't see us, but we represent, I promise.
Yeah, I'm so intrigued by the program, and I love that you're doing it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, I'm going to tell our listeners the website, conservationdogshawaii.org. You can go there, see if your dog qualifies. KawaiiCRBK9@gmail.com if you want to ask these dudes some questions. You can also go to MrLanceEsteem.com.
Yeah.
There is a website, CRBHawaii.org, if you want to nerd out on coconut rhinoceros beetle facts and intrigue. And you'll be able to send this interview to your friends with mulch piles, probably in an hour or so. You can find it at KKCR.org. So, thanks. Any final words?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.